Hey everyone, this is episode 6 of the Activate Podcast with Jeffrey Bunton Jr. My name is Eric English, and first off, thanks for spending some time with me today. I'm so excited for you to hear my conversation with Jeffrey. I've known Jeffrey for about 4 years now, and it's been thrilling to watch his agency grow. He is the president and CEO of the Bunton Group, an advertising agency located in the beautiful Nashville, Tennessee. During our time together, we talk about his transition into running the business that was started by his dad, what organizational culture looks and feels like at the Bunton Group, handwritten notes, and how he appreciates the things around him. Now, without further ado, let's get into the conversation. Welcome to episode 6 of the Activate Podcast. Today we have Jeffrey Bunton Jr. Thank you, Jeffrey, for spending a few minutes with us today. I appreciate your time, and I'm really looking forward to our conversation this morning.
Thank you, Eric. It's great to be with you, and I'm looking forward to it as well.
Awesome. Well, just to begin with, many would, I think, be very interested in just the origin story of you, Jeffrey, personal life, and then what led you into the agency world in which you're in now.
Okay, so I run an agency based in Nashville. It was founded by my dad in 1972, and I grew up as the oldest of three kids, sort of around the business through him. Ironically enough, early in her career, way before she was my mother was also a copywriter at another shop. So it's certainly in my blood, although as a child sort of and young man growing up, I was by my dad strongly encouraged to consider other things. And I think it was not because work came home with him and not because he discouraged it, but it was just a advocacy on his part for me to not have bias toward advertising. And as the oldest of three siblings, typically the oldest sort of takes that advice and goes with it. I got a taste for the business, though, through a summer job that I had at, you know, our company. And I was put into a training program by what I affectionately refer to as our first sort of New York advertising diva employee team member, a woman who came to us from New York and went to work in the agency as the top account person. And she put on a training program that just electrified me and stimulated me. And she pulled me to the side and said, you know, this has nothing to do with sort of who your family is or any of that. You should consider this business. You could be pretty good at this. And so I wanted to, and I probably wanted and needed to hear that. And so it led me to pursue what the industry was made of at that time and led me into sort of choosing it as a career after a liberal arts degree, after an English major in college, and wound up in Chicago working for sort of what's now Draft FCB, at that time Bozell Worldwide, which was a great time to be at that agency, and I just loved it. So that's how I got started. And then once I was there for a while, I sort of realized this is for me, and I made my way back to where we are now, which is Nashville.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. And you have a beautiful wife and a family, and you guys remain in Nashville or the Nashville area where you grew up.
We do. I've got my wife, Kemp. We've been married for 19 years. She's from Mobile, Alabama. And we have three kids, two boys and a girl in that order, 14, 11, and 7. So we're super busy with family and home and sports and outside, you know, stuff. And it's a good, I think, reminder if you're in our business to have the balance of that and the prioritization of that and the work sort of, while it's demanding, is always in the context of what those priorities and values and needs are for us as a unit and in the lives of her and the kids. So it keeps everything sort of grounded. It's important, I think, to me and also to our organization.
Well, that's so good, Jeffrey. Well, and I'm sure those conversations will begin soon with your children, the same that your dad had. Hey, stay away from this business.
You know, it wasn't that hard-edged, but I think that might have been the undertone. And it's it's interesting to watch the kids. And, you know, last night watching the NCAA basketball final, the middle child was commenting on the Apple television, and I'm sort of probably like somebody was doing about me, sort of intrigued that he's commenting and noticing things, and also horrified that he's commenting and noticing things. So we've got some time yet, but we'll see. And he had his phone in his lap, of course, which we try to discourage, but that's the difference in what they're exposed to and what, you know, we were exposed to, Eric.
That's right. That's life. I know. Well, family business, Jeffrey, as you and I have talked in the past, you know that I have a background and I grew up in an entrepreneurial family. So talk about the transition from your dad's kind of birth of the Bunton Group into the next generation of transitioning that business underneath your leadership, and kind of what are some of those foundational things that you and your dad talked about through that period? But also, what were some of the conversations with, I mean, I'm sure there were long-term team members, there were leaders within the organization. What made that successful?
Yeah, I think we've been able to, for this to work, because things were talked about, and some things I credit him entirely with this, he never brought up and we didn't talk about. And I'm not sure I'm a perfect student of which was which. It's a way to say, I think I'm just, not just me, but the whole organization has been extraordinarily blessed by the thoughtfulness and craft with which, in an unspoken way, a few people helped architect, you know, the next generation of the business. But he started in 72 and always prioritized what I still refer to as our first foundational chapter as an organization, which was client results. And so we were born and are still living as partners to our clients to help build their business. And I think for all the new ways to do that and all the innovation that's happened and all the disruption that's happened and all the, at times, transients in the client agency relationship, that's still the currency of why we exist. And I just, you know, it's just the ember that I think I realized, and 115 of us realized, that we still sort of carry that ember forward. And I certainly got a sense of that first, an appreciation for that and a value for that, you know, at some pretty early stage of my assessing what the industry was. The other thing that I would say really shaped me and shapes, you know, what we try to do now, we talk about Everything Speaks, is I grew up on a family farm, sixth generation. And so I was around from an early age, just, you know, normal folks, people from all walks of life, people that were very special and important to our existence as a farm family on the land, in some cases who couldn't read or, you know, who worked hard every day, but they just had tons of value and worth to us as a family, as people, and to me. And therefore, I think, you know, what we are as business people and also great students and appreciators of human beings, of people. And so those things, I think, fueled the taste I got in my mouth for the agency. And I saw an opportunity for those things to be pretty special and pretty different, particularly against, you know, large agencies in New York or Chicago, et cetera, that could get out of touch. Mm-hmm. And when I went into the big, you know, market environment, big agency environment in Chicago, I kept those, I watched, you know, at that time, the organization I was in really, sort of lose touch with those two things. And it inspired me to think about what an agency in a quote second tier or a regional quote market could do. And for us, that's been Nashville. And you've seen it in Austin and Richmond and Minneapolis and, you know, Portland, and you've seen it happen in other markets. And so those things became the currency of why I wanted to do this. And I think it was important for my dad to have a sense of what my own whys were, for then the opportunity to start to be architected for me to come and do the things we've done. So
that's perfect. Well, and just like you said, it being that there's not, you know, a toolkit or one answer of
to me and said, I'd been there, you know, I came in, I ran errands, you know, it was before email, you had to run all the errands around town, and a lot of clients were out of town, but some were in town. And mm-hmm. So I started at the bottom, you know, and I worked my way up. And when I was in Chicago, I I started to work on strategy in the first person. I would sort of project the work we were doing into the emotions of the end consumer. And I started to write briefs in the first person. Mm-hmm. And the creative team really loved that. And so when I came back to the agency, I had the opportunity, I went into account management, but I had the opportunity to work on strategy probably more than most account people through the work I had done in Chicago. And it had the same currency here inside our company at that time, which was 1997. And I'll never forget it. I was in my office. I started sharing an office with a guy. And, you know, X years later, I was in an office, just a person working. And my dad came to me and said, you know, it's time for you to if you would like to have a conversation with me about acquiring the business. And it's the way we grew up. So there was not going to be a pass along or a gift or a, you know, it was a transaction. And he said, don't answer me now as to whether you want to do that, but I'll be back in 2 weeks and I'd like your answer at that time.
Yeah.
And so 2 weeks later, you know, to the hour, which is a bit the way he's wired, he came back and said, what are your thoughts? And I said, I really appreciate the opportunity. I've thought a lot about it and I'd like to do this. And he said, okay, I'm glad to hear that, although it's your decision and I'll be back in another week. I want you to keep thinking about it. And so a week later he came back and I said, I've thought more and I'm certain I'd like the opportunity to pursue this, and it's an honor. And so we entered into, with outside counsel, sort of a fair evaluation of the organization and a transaction that, was built over a number of years that I was able to enter into, and we were able to complete ahead of schedule. And in 2004, I became the president and have owned it and run it ever since. And most of the good things that have happened since then are entirely due to our people.
Right.
Somewhere in that, not even transaction, in that experience that he had with me and I had with him and we both had with the company, a lot of people say it's hard for that to work between generations. And I think we're in the special small percent where it's gone well.
Right. And the one thing I think that I hear in all this is that it wasn't, you know, there was a transaction involved, yes, but it was more of a natural over time, the employees, the team members, the leadership, your dad obviously respected you and where you were taking it. And it was, you know, it wasn't one day wake up and Jeffrey Jr. is running everything. It was a smooth and expected transition into your role.
I think that's right. I think that's, I think that we had probably stages of working to be confident that it was, you know, at least a neutral risk. You know, and anything's a risk. Every day is a risk sort of in our industry. But I think it was the first phase of it was, do we have sort of thoughtful values compatibility? Do we have, can we see the invisible things the same way? Integrity, you know, the thoughtfulness towards our team members, how we engage with our clients, keeping our eye on results. And then I think it was stage two was as I was allowed to be more forward in our client relationships, you know, he tough to do as an entrepreneur, founder, a very assertive personality, step back and let not just me. And I think it's a collective, it's a we, not I success story for sure from my eyes, but others were stepping forward to take care of the frontline things, I would call them, the strategy, the creative, the media, the strategic plans for the clients, the relationships with the clients. And so those things had their own, you know, relative stability, which allowed then some of this to happen. And I think there were, obviously the organization at that time had and has always had great people. And so there was the real benefit and tailwind of, you know, not just me, but others who were also immersed in the company's values and his values, and also sort of driving us to try to do the things that we all wanted to do. And so some of the folks, I'm sure, watched me and hoped I wouldn't be able to be successful or wouldn't want to do this. And as I started to move in that direction, I think they opted out, and some were excited by that and stayed in. And some of those are still here with us today. I now call them sort of my partners in the business, and others stayed, you know, for various amounts of time. And we've done some good things together. So, you know, there's always people dynamics that shake out, but I think largely he had set the whole organization up to really understand what we're here to do. And that really propelled the success that we've experienced through those times.
Excellent. Well, since this feels like a natural time to talk about the people currently at Button Group around the culture there, the retention, the recruiting, maintaining those solid relationships with clients. And then I think an important thing that you can kind of snap onto the end or bring it up when you would like to would be this whole, the bad rap that the millennial generation gets when in fact I see it in a different way. So talk about your, maybe either what you've kept the same or what you've changed as far as culture. You know, what are some of the fun aspects that you keep within the organization now, and kind of what are some of the what are some of the things that set you guys apart to keep you a leader in the ad agency business?
Yeah, so we, you know, I think that the greatest challenge for all businesses and certainly our industry and our agency is, you know, it's an arms race for talented people. But in our world, it's not just talent, it's also talent that's highly compatible with our values. So we are in a relentless pursuit of finding right talent, right values compatibility, right talent, right values compatibility. And it's a 1-2 punch. If we have high talent, low values, you know, their work might be great, but they're just not going to add positively to our culture. And if they're high values, low talent, they may be fun to have around or comfortable in our environment, but they're not bringing a product that's really what we feel we need to do to be as good as we want to be and to deliver for our clients. And so it's a 1-2 punch as you look at sort of people. And in our industry, you know, we used to compete for, we'd find people that were down to us or 3 or 4 other agencies, and we would need to sway them toward us away from the other agencies. Now, as you know, you find a super talented, high values compatible young person, and they're down to your agency in advertising or this startup in technology or this nonprofit or this, you know, go back to school. And so they're not, they haven't put themselves in an, you know, advertising marketing swim lane. They're still in a bigger pool of, I might go here, 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 here. So the work to get someone to lean in and commit to you is different. I think it's in some ways more fun and more invigorating, but it's different to recruit and convert people to come into the organization. And so we're very transparent and very collaborative and very sort of open. And we've learned to interview as a group. And if we get it right, we got it right as a group. And if we get it wrong, we got it wrong as a group. I do study these metrics like crazy. And I'll confess that I didn't do it until a few years ago. I let culture after the 08, 9, 10, 11 downturn, I let culture slip, and I snapped back into line in my own job description around that topic about 24 plus months ago, and really elevated it, you know, in my own soul and on my own desk and in my own time allocation, but also sort of lifted it up, stood in front of everybody and said, this has slipped, and it's, I'm here to say we're going to re-elevate this. And it's, I'd like to think, made a lot of the difference. But truly what makes our culture work is those young people you're talking about that are in our organization. And so from a data point perspective, we have 25 people at the Button Group that have been here 10 years or more. So our VPs, our department heads have a lot of tenure with the organization. It's unheard of to have that many people, I think, in an agency of any size, certainly in one of 120 employees, who have been there that long. In addition to that, we have about 55 who I would call in that millennial generation who have been here under 2 years. And so it's a powerful sort of 1-2 punch of stability, values understanding, coaching, mentorship in the department head leadership ranks, and then rock star talent, great energy, great values, sort of flowing, moving laterally, fluidly, organically in their jobs, but stretching the boundaries of what their jobs are, through a millennial generation, and they're super special. I say we have the best, you know, 65, 80, 100 millennials of any organization in the country. I really believe that. I get the reputation. I resist broad labels for groups of people, but our experience with our newest generation workers couldn't be better. And a huge part of the momentum we have as an agency, I'm certain of it.
Yeah, I completely agree. They do get a bad rap, but I believe that they're very clear on what they want. Do they need guidance? Yeah, but I think each generation needs that. But, you know, it was like for me growing up, it was Atari and Nintendo were going to be the end of the world. You know, so I think each generation, whether it was, what was it? You know, Elvis was the devil, right? for that generation. Yeah. So I think, you know, and it just happens, it's a generational thing, but that's positive to hear. And I know being in Nashville, there's just an enormous amount of talent. So for you guys to be able to capture that, that's incredible, because there are other agencies, there's other businesses that are in search of that same talent. So that's awesome.
Yeah, we're blessed to be in Nashville. It's a destination for, you know, people at all levels, certainly young people, businesses, clients. We've moved. It's been interesting. When I sort of took the reins in 04, I recall really having to sell Nashville. You know, I'd get somebody that was down to San Francisco or Seattle or Austin and maybe Nashville, and we'd pluck a few off. We'd get them to say yes to our agency and also our city. And now we don't have the, you know, the other side of that coin is if everybody wants to be in Nashville, you know, it's no less challenging to recruit for them because there's tons more opportunities here for them to look at. But I think it's certainly a great time to be trying to get people to come to the city, or if they already are, trying to get them to come to our organization. So it's helped a lot.
Awesome. Well, Jeffrey, to kind of, to get to the other half of our conversation, I've got some quick hits that I'm going to give you. So I think these will be kind of fun and maybe something that you don't think about a lot, but I think will be valuable for people to hear. So the first one is, do you have a favorite failure of yours? And this could be any failure. It could be, you know, within the industry or before you joined, that was a failure at first, but looking back, ended up seeing that as a success.
You know, I think probably, you know, trying to sort of be authentic here and not having given, you know, the topics any prior thought, I think back often to the first significantly large client relationship that was for us, Tractor Supply Company, which was, you only have a few in your career where you really take an organization hand in hand with leadership and suppliers and their store workers, you know, and in some cases the analyst community, and you walk together from early stage success to significant transformational revolutionary growth, double, triple the size of the business. And for us, we've had a few of those. One of them was Tractor Supply, and it is a client relationship that did not make the evolution with us from generation one to generation two, from sort of senior, my dad and some of his work with them to what was going to be me and some others in the next round of work. And we lost it. And I remember, and I still have sort of back here on my desk, I'm looking at it, some of the thinking that we took them. And it's bittersweet. It's sweet in that it had already been an enormous success. It's bitter in that we didn't get to stay together and continue to grow really both organizations. And I think we would have to more levels of success than they experienced in the direction they went. It was the first time that I was really manning the ship of the presentation, and it was really good. And the marketing people at that time in the organization on the client side confided in us that it was really good and that it was winning, yet there were some other things at work below the surface that might result in the business going in another direction. And that's ultimately what came to happen. And, you know, it was the first taste of sort of the things that can lead to defeat, even when you put on a winning performance and you had the right winning priorities. And so I wouldn't call it a failure, but I think on paper and in some ways it was a loss of a significant account. And but we found in ourselves, without having to sleep too many nights before we were ready, tons of reserves to keep cheering for that client organization, and have watched what they've done since. And I don't know that they've watched what we've done since, but both parties have gone on to do pretty special stuff. But it was, it was one of those, it was like losing a game in overtime in some level of sports as a kid. You know, you learn and draw from that for a long time, and it stays with you. And I would say that's still true about us. I look forward to the day where we might have the opportunity to have another shot with those guys. And, you know, it was like DDB and McDonald's in Chicago. There was huge drive to get it back. Mm-hmm. And ultimately they were able to do that. So I think about that for me and for others who were a part of that meeting, who are still here, I guess in some ways in thinking about the question.
Yeah. And those type of things, strengthen the muscles and kind of give you the chops necessary to kind of win them back over and continue to grow. So that's a perfect story. So what about any weird habits, any absurd things that you love that most people don't know?
You know, I'm still a sucker for some old school things. And so, I don't know that it's a weird habit. I have a bevy of those. You'll have to do a podcast with, you know,
yeah, just that
my team, but I do appreciate it's back to sort of talent in the world of, you know, lots of people tearing down your door with LinkedIn and sending you emails and, you know, coming in and out for meetings. I still do really value, and I'm on the record in the past as saying, if it's a tiebreaker between two candidates, if somebody sends a handwritten thank you note, you know, and spells everything right in it, then that still goes a long way. And, you know, as a dad, I try to, while we're not near as good at it as my conscience would like to be, I still try to teach, you know, my kids to send a note if somebody asked them on a trip, or send a note to their grandparents if, you know, as a thank you for holiday gifts. And so I just think the currency of the personal touch on a piece of paper in our super technology world still matters a lot. And I think it's an authentic stamp of what you believe and stand for. And I think if I see that cross my desk, or I see that come in really in anything, it still goes a long way for me. And I'm in some ways hopeful that others feel that way, or will start to feel that way again if they've lost that. I think it's important.
Yeah, I love that. It stands out from all the noise that we've mentioned with, like you said, with LinkedIn and some of the other stuff. It definitely kind of rises above everything. Over the past few years, what new belief, behavior, or habit maybe has most improved your life? And there's not really a specified number of years, but is there anything that you'd like to share on that?
I think, and I think my wife might roll her eyes, but I think in the past few years, probably, at the risk of snowballing my prior thoughts on thank you notes, I think putting my phone down has been an important habit for me to form. And I know that we all feel the need to be connected, you know, to news and to each other and to our clients' latest updates and to sort of culture and trends and the stimuli of technology in your pocket. But I think, as you know, I watch where I pick my head up and I look truly through my eyes, not down at a black rectangle in my breast pocket, but out sort of at the world around us, at the skyline changing, at nature, at, you know, things you pass by on your way driving to work you didn't even notice. For me, at least, not to diss technology, but to advocate for sort of clarity without distraction, for me, it's been healthy distance, at least at certain times every day, from the phone. And I actually think brands that are learning how to not tell people that, but to sort of reward that through authentic experiences, not just technological experience, actually, frankly, doing both, are the brands that are going to win with this next generation. So about looking up at life, not down sort of at the phone. I don't want to be hypocritical. It's been hard for me to get that in my own daily behavior, but I am a work in progress, and I have learned that when I do that, you know, your senses that were there before technology sort of hijacked them come back, and there's pretty special stuff going on around the world that I don't want to miss personally, and I don't want others to forget are there.
Well, and I mean, that's in and of itself, that's your way of, you know, meditation, of being present in the moment. So that's awesome.
I talk with my brother about must be present to win. You know, you hear that phrase in sweepstakes or drawings or whatever, but I think it's actually quite true in sort of the state of mind and state of soul you're in. If you're, you know, we're all trying to think ahead, or there's this other thing creeping in, or the next meeting, but if learning to be present that, you know, present for yourself, present for your family, present for the idea that needs to come from, you know, your brain, present for your culture. It's hard.
Yeah.
And so I actually do believe that requires a new or an intentional sort of muscle mass to be able to do that. And I'm certain it's always been a hallmark of leadership, but I think it's a more challenged offering to provide to people and to be able to give yourself. And I find it quite important. So yeah, it's a good word for it. It's presence.
Yeah. Well, right in with that, when you have these times of feeling overwhelmed or unfocused, what do you do? Is there a particular practice that you do when you're going through, whether it's at work or things going on with family and thoughts, future things are just overwhelming?
Yeah, I think they've changed a bit for me through the years, but there's probably a couple of through lines. So there was a time where it was, let's go for a run, and I ought to do that more than I'm doing it now. But two things have always helped me. I can be guilty of sort of being at my desk, but one is to be in nature, you know. So in nature is the fire escape of a building. If it has to be, it's just sort of get outside for 5 minutes, or if you can, you know, 55 minutes or 5 hours, but just while you think you're going to solve it, if you spend five more minutes breaking the lead on your pencil, you know, what you really might need to do to solve it is to walk away from the desk and go outside and breathe. And so out of town early morning before a meeting, just get out and take a walk around the street, around the hotel. The second piece, so it's sort of be in nature as part of it for me. And I think that's back to the way I'm wired as a kid that grew up on a farm, probably. The other piece of it is pad and paper and things to write with. And so some often less keyboard, more notepad helps me a lot. And so the good news about that is, you know, you can kind of be anywhere and have the thought or have ability to scratch it down on paper and keep, you know, plenty of Sharpies, et cetera. We got, you know, yes, we got a lot of flat screens, but we also have whiteboards. And so we're not fully automated paperless world. We believe, I think, still in the raw sort of authentic inspiration and progress that can come from, you know, saying things that get creative teams to grab for their pencil, or having the ability to just scratch things out and get them into movement inside our organization. For me, therefore, it's to kind of answer your question, it's kind of get away through nature and also get things down on paper sometimes and off the computer screen.
I love it. And I love a good whiteboard session still.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's an art. It's a high art now to, you know, our world is not have great meetings with the clients and then work without them in the room and then come back and say, we've done great thinking, which we can do. It's now have great meetings with the clients, have them over 2 days later and have a great whiteboard session and try to make 2 months of work happen in a 2-hour whiteboard session. It's really all about well thought out, spontaneous feeling progress together at the wall. And so mm-hmm. Whether the clients are a part of that or it's the internal agency team doing that, that is to me, you know, in our world of less time and often less resource to get more done, how do you cut corners by getting things riffing with high energy at a high level of thinking together? And it's often, it's the whiteboard. I mean, that's just goofy and cliche, but I think that's a that's a real art form of success, probably in any business.
Yeah, I think so. Well, and kind of the final question, the question that everybody asks, right? It kind of seems a little bit cliche, but how do you define success? And then what do you believe to be your purposes here on earth?
I think success organizationally for us is, you know, did the things that keep the CEO awake at night get better today because we did something to try to improve them? I mean, that's what we, so if that's traffic or the stock price or retaining employees at the client, whatever that is, more innovation, you know, better culture, that's, you know, we're only here because we can affect the biggest things that are important to our client's business. I think underneath that, where we get a chemical release, and I definitely get an emotional reward, is that we've created something that cuts all the way through to the gut soul of the consumer or the employees that matters and makes their lives tingle, makes them tear up, makes them laugh, makes them hug their family, makes them love their job, makes them love the car they bought, you know, whatever it is that we've created something. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, you say that word a lot in our industry, but that's not easy to do. We've created something that left an indelible emotional spark that if only for a moment, and ideally for longer than that, there's this wonderful release that happens in their spirit. And, I think you know when you hit that ball far and straight, mm-hmm. and it's still the beautiful permission slip of our industry is to create something that has that happen. And so for me personally, I look at that as my purpose through our product, but I also look at it as my purpose in the way I relate to our people and my purpose in the way I try to honor and relate to our board and our founder and in the way I try to relate to our client partners. And ultimately, we've got, you know, I think we try to remember, and I hope we all would remember that we're working for client A, and client A has 13,000 employees. And if there's 3 to 4 people in each of their homes, then that's 60,000-70,000 human beings whose mm-hmm. livelihood is really tied to their career, and their career, their company's livelihood, in some ways, we have the opportunity to make better. And so that loop is really special. And the context of that loop, you multiply that by 8, 10, 15, 20 client partnerships, that's a lot of lives that you have the opportunity to sort of cut through and elevate and lift up. And yes, it's about business, which is hard metrics, but those are the soft metrics that at the human level, I think, you know, we hold pretty dear. And I leap out of bed, you know, at least 6 out of 7 mornings a week because of both those things in combination. But the latter is pretty special.
That's so, so good. Jeffrey, where can the listeners stop by and kind of follow what you're doing or say hi on either social media or other online platforms?
Yeah, so you can find the Button Group on Facebook. You can find, you won't find me there. You can find the Button Group on LinkedIn and Twitter. You can find me personally on LinkedIn and Instagram. And so, and obviously our website, buttongroup.com, is out there, and most days I think it's actually fairly well updated. And then, you know, we still have a fax machine. We have a phone, and we open our mail. And so we live in a world where all avenues in, we're responsive to. So and we love to meet people, and we love to have people that are interested in us, or if they heard something that they think is weird, you know, we're communicators. So I would certainly be honored and welcome anybody that's listened to this, A, thanks, and B, you know, it's important to us to get to know new folks. So I would welcome anyone through those channels.
That's great. And each one of these references that Jeffrey has pointed to will include in the podcast show notes to follow today's conversation. And again, Jeffrey, thank you so much for blocking out some time for us. I really think the listeners will find value and be inspired by just what you're doing at the Button Group, and also just the success you've experienced taking a great family business into an even better one.
Eric, thanks for what you're doing. I appreciate spending the time with you. It's been great for me as well.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Hey, it's Eric again. My challenge for you today after the conversation with Jeffrey is to think about a few things. One is what it truly means to lead by example, and how those things were imprinted in Jeffrey's life early on, but even more so as he worked alongside his dad in the agency. What it means to invest in your talent, your team members, and how to truly take care of organizational culture, and to never forget to appreciate the things outside of work, outside of the daily grind. I'll include additional information on Jeffrey, including social links and the podcast show notes. Also, you'll find his mailing address. I'm sure he'd appreciate a handwritten note. Thank you again for tuning in today. In each episode, we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you reach your greatest goals. And always, I'd be super grateful if you would subscribe to and share the Activate podcast on iTunes or whatever platform you use. And you can also check out EnglishEric.com.